This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 5, Episode 10 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
I'm John.
What's up?
Today is part 3 in our series on LeVar Burton, where we're looking at his work as an Emmy winner/nominee. And today we're going to be looking at his work on Reading Rainbow. Now, Reading Rainbow is a children's show.
Are you reading this?
No.
Good.
All right. It's a children's show, which aired from 1983 to 2009 with some more stuff that came afterwards and everything. It won 10 Emmys for Best Children's Series. Hmm. It won 2 Emmys for Best Performer in a Children's Series, which was LeVar Burton, which means that in total, Burton has won 12 Emmys for this. He's been nominated for a ton more. Including a primetime Emmy.
Is that a basketball team?
Primetime Emmys?
12.
12? No. An entire team, yes. Including all the players on the bench.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I've seen that movie. The 13th Man.
Okay. I don't know what that movie is.
Not to be confused with the 13th Warrior.
He's a ghost. He helps them play.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Well, Max, do you want to sort of give a description of what Reading Rainbow was? For those people who may not be familiar?
Well, I mean, like, for the most part, it was largely just a show about children's books. There were the variety of ways in which they explored children's books is actually kind of vast, because there were, like, legitimately just people talking about the books. There were book reviews. There were, like, conversation about the books. There were like, videos that, like, reenacted sections of the books. And there were, like, little story time sections that were sort of more about telling the story of the book. I mean, it's a hugely varied thing.
It seems like they had kind of a basic structure in place where, you know, you'd see LeVar Burton on a quote-unquote field trip, as they would call them, where he was doing something. You know, he was in, like, let's say, the one episode that I watched today, he was in a diner. And it's like, oh, wow, you know, I love diners, but I've never worked in one. I've always wanted to. And, you know, it's similar to this book which I have here called Blah, 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 where
Steven the Dinosaur.
Right.
Works as an architect for a local firm. And he occasionally goes to a diner for breakfast.
That's about how much this particular book had to do with a diner.
Yeah, I remember the show.
It was about a diner heist, you know, and stuff like that.
I remember the show.
So then, you know, they say, yeah, this book is crazy. And then they go to a reading of the book where basically they do a sort of visual, almost, I guess, what today would be kind of flash animation telling of the book, where they have someone who it seems like was usually a celebrity.
Well, as I recall, it wasn't always the same. It wasn't always same sort of reenactment.
No,
but sometimes it was just like live action.
To give an example.
Okay, you know? That's fine.
And they'd have like sort of an animated version of the artwork in there. Like the one that I saw was narrated by Peter Falk. I saw another one that was narrated by Michelle Trachtenberg. You know, it seemed like they got pretty big name people to do these readings, and they would read, from what I can tell, was like the entire book. And then they'd come back to LeVar Burton in the diner, and he'd be like, yeah, that was a great book. You know, in that book, this person was a cook at a diner. I think I'm going to try that. And then you see how that works. And then they kind of do, it's almost like you know, kid book inception, because then it gets even deeper. Like in this episode, you know, someone's like, okay, LeVar, we need some tortellini. And he's like,
nobody take kid book inception. I'm working on a screenplay right now.
and he's like, what's tortellini? And then he's like, oh, look at that. There's
delicious
tortellini. I wonder how this is made. And then they cut to like a package kind of thing. As in television terms, where you see a guy and he's like, hi, my name's Joe. I make tortellini. Here's how I do it. And then you see the process of them making the tortellini. And then it cuts back to the diner, and he's like, wow, I never knew that that much work went into making tortellini. And, you know, he did his whole thing where there was a little few, you know, whatever cutesy things with him in the diner. And then he's like, yeah, that was great. You know, and this was a great book. And so are these books. But you don't have to take my word for it. And then they would cut to some kids, like three kids doing reviews of three different books that they read. And they're like, you can check these out at your local library.
It wasn't always three. Sometimes it was two.
Sometimes it was two. Okay. Sometimes, you know, I mean, they always varied on the formula a bit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that was it. That was the show. So basically what it was a way to engage kids by saying, like, here's a book, read this book, but then also investigate what's going on in the book further and, you know, maybe learn about the world in the process.
Yeah.
I don't know. So John, did you watch this as a youngster?
No. I was, when it debuted in 83, I had a pretty good handle on reading already.
Oh.
And was deep into my Jedi lore studies.
Mm.
And, after that faded, I went straight into Van Halen, which probably did plenty of damage to my literacy, but,
and hearing.
Yeah, but it was enjoyable. And, there you go. So I think it missed me I think I was just outside of the initial target demo or whatever, because I just, it just never hooked me.
Okay, so now, Max, you're slightly older than me, so you probably would have been about 5 when this thing hit.
Yeah, honestly, it's actually kind of similar to John's side. I mean, like, when I was aware of reading Rainbow, like, I was still a really little kid. Like, it came on when I was watching TV, and it was really, for me, the point where I could stop. Because
yep.
I was, at that point, I had jumped straight to sci-fi history. Like, I was reading Asimov and Heinlein and a lot of Arthur C. Clarke.
As a 5-year-old?
No, well, as like a 7-year-old.
He was a precocious little lad.
No, I immediately went from, like, you know, like, coloring books to anything with spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if it had a spaceship in it, I would read it. And, you know, I mean, like, years later, I would revisit, like, the Foundation trilogy and go, there's a lot more sex in here than I remembered. But, I mean, like, you know, you just don't notice it when you're a kid. You're just like, space, aliens.
Well, I mean, you know, to speak to that, too, it was also, I mean, really was the height of the whole shuttle program thing. And,
yeah.
You know, there was a lot of focus on that. So I think that... you know, that makes total sense, because
yeah, I wasn't outside of the world of, like, the space craze. Like, if I dig through, and every once in a while I'll, like, dig through my old, like, kid stuff in, like, my parents' basements or something like that, and I'll find, like, a sticker book of space stuff.
Yep.
And there'll be, like, a bunch of little, like, drawings that are utter meaningless gibberish to me now, but they are, you know, they were intended as references to sci-fi books that I was reading. But, like, I was not a fan of the children's books that were on the show, but that doesn't mean I didn't watch it periodically. I would definitely see it from time to time. And, like, I have, like, you know, I have enough of a memory of the show to, like, remember episodes that, like, I did actually enjoy and episodes that I stopped watching because I didn't really care about... Like sometimes it was just like a story of, like, a little boy who lives in the 70s who, you know, gets a paper route and things don't go as planned. And sometimes it was like a dinosaur that has a time machine. And I'd be like, whoa, now that sounds interesting. I'm going to stay tuned to this. And I would watch that, and I would, you know, I would actually stick it through all the way to the end. And when it got to, like, the early 90s, like, I would actually watch it because of LeVar Burton. Like, that was the only reason I would watch it at that point. Because, I mean, at that point, I'm, like, a teenager, and, like, I wouldn't wake up for it. But, like, if it was on, I would go, oh, I'll watch this. LeVar Burton's in it. Can't be too bad. And it was never too bad. And I honestly thought, like, you know, if I had gotten into this as a kid, Maybe I wouldn't hate so much. But it's too late.
Yes, it
if
is.
If it had only been more exciting.
Oh, well.
If it had more space more battles, I would have watched much more Reading Rainbow.
Yeah. Now, for me, I'm a little bit younger, I guess. I was in preschool the year that it started. I was 3. So I guess I was the perfect age for Reading Rainbow. And it's weird because I, of course, was always aware of it, but I always kind of thought of it as an adult. Like, going into this, I was like, I remember it being sort of on, but I don't remember actually watching it, you know? I don't remember anything specific about it. I just kind of remember LeVar Burton being there, and that's about it. And I don't even understand how this whole thing works. And then I was going through and watching a few episodes for this thing and seeing that structure. It all came back to me, you know, seeing the opening title sequence and everything like that. It all came back to me. The kids with their recommendations at the end and everything like that. And
I actually remember a lot of those.
Yeah, I think I've seen a lot more of this show than I had remembered. And in watching it, you know, I started off, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start off with the episode where they visit the set of Next Generation. It was season one of Next Gen. Tasha Yar, well, I don't know exactly when it aired versus when it was shot, because they make a big deal out of Worf, and they're like, he's the chief of security. But in the episode that they're shooting, Tasha Yar is running around. But you can see them doing their blocking, where Riker totally does his Riker maneuver and puts his you know, like, and you get to see, I guess one of the things that made it like a big deal for fans was it actually had some bloopers on it.
The Riker maneuver where he like falls into a wall in order to hit on some woman who's standing near that wall?
No, the Riker maneuver is when he puts his leg up onto an object right next to someone who's sitting next to that object so that his crotch is at their face level. Yeah, that's the Riker maneuver. But yeah, I mean, it was sort of great seeing that because, you know, you see him on the set, like standing by the captain's chair, and he's like, this is, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like this book called Roger the Bionic Rabbit or whatever, and his television show. And, you know, on that...
His public access television show that he hosts with his younger brother?
Probably. And on that book...
Oh, I want to see that movie.
You know, you see him making the television show, and, you know, I make a television show. I'm on Star Trek. And, you know, this looks like the set of the Enterprise, but if you turn the camera around... And then they literally flip the camera around to where the view screen would be, and it's just a sound stage with lights and everything, and I'm like...
What?
How
is it not in space?
Exactly.
Hold on. I'm like 90% sure they shot that in space.
Well, I am too, you know? And I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's the way that I'm wired because of when I saw this and everything like that. But like when I saw Next Generation in my development or whatever. But like when he flipped that camera around, I'm just like, oh my God, my head was blown back.
The ground shattered beneath you, you fell through a chasm into your own childhood.
Like, I have a bachelor's degree in film, you know? I should know how this works, right? But it, like, shattered my perceptions of reality in that. It was kind of great, you know?
Yeah.
I remember the shot when I was, like, a very young child, and I saw that they actually had the camera in like the other side of the room, and you could see the view screen there, and I was like, oh, it's actually just there.
Yeah,
like, because it had never occurred to me that it was like just that close. I kind of thought of it like a movie theater, like it had to be
further,
like
away.
15 right. or 20 feet away,
kind of like on a sitcom or something like that,
I guess. I don't know, like some part of the wiring in my brain, it like indicated like a very different geography to that bridge set than actually was there. Also, it was way bigger in my head than it actually was.
Yeah.
I guess it's a TV trick.
But it was great. And, you know, then after that, he's like, you see him and he's like sitting in a place and he's got like these film reels and he's like, all this film, because they make a big deal out of like coverage, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, we shoot it from this angle and we shoot it from this angle. It's like, we've got all this film, all these angles, and how do we make this into a TV show?
We have a medium angle shot, and we have an over the shoulder of one guy shot, and we have the over the shoulder of the other guy shot, and that's all we do.
That's
ever.
All we do, because we're Next Generation.
We don't do anything yeah. else. Literally, that's the entire job of the cinematographer. He doesn't even come into work some days.
So then they go down and you see how they edit, which to me, that was just fascinating, because I've done tape-to-tape editing on, and it's the worst, and it just took me back to high school. And
yeah.
Anyway.
That was the only way to copy next-gen episodes for friends in high school.
There yeah. you go. So seeing that, I was like, this is awesome, right? But then I was like, well, I should watch like a few more episodes just to kind of see, because obviously my opinion of this is going to be skewed because it's Star Trek, right? And I'm sitting there, and my wife is sitting there, and we're watching the thing about the diner, and like at one point, like, she has to leave, and she's like, pause this, it's getting good now, you know? And like the two of us, you know, are sitting there absolutely riveted by this guy making tortellini, you know, and we don't even eat tortellini, but we just found it to be fascinating.
Wait, is that like a conscious religious choice not to eat tortellini? Or is
no,
it just
it's just a personal preference, you know?
I don't believe the pasta should be crimped.
Although
hey,
actually...
Hey, those are fighting words. Okay.
Although actually after seeing this guy, like there's this one point where like the whole time he's like, I like to mix it by hand. And he's wearing gloves and my wife's like, you know he doesn't wear gloves when the camera is off. And then at one point he's like, how do I know it's ready? And then he reaches in and then he eats some and he's like, oh, it's perfect. And he like takes a bite and he's got like a chunk left in his hand. He's like, now it's time to take it over to the machine that cuts it or whatever. And he throws the piece that he just bit off of back into the...
Teeth gloves. He has teeth gloves on.
I guess that's what it was, yeah. You know? But anyway, my point with all of this...
The moral of the story is that you should never eat food made by anyone else.
Exactly. My point with all of this is that even as an adult, this sort of behind-the-scenes how-stuff-works thing... was absolutely riveting, and I can totally understand why this show was on the air for 27 years or whatever it was, because it's really interesting, and I can imagine as a kid being enthralled by it.
Wow, wait a minute. That actually, it sounds like it's almost a spiritual forebear of Dirty Jobs, that show with Mike Rowe.
Maybe. It's kind of like the clean version of Dirty Jobs.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like a lot of PBS involved a lot of similar things. Like there, like the 3-2-1 Contact and the Electric Company. There's a humongous amount of, here we are at the place where we make crayons, and this is how I make crayons. Here's the colored stuff,
oh,
and here's
man.
The wax stuff.
I remember that episode.
And we press it into a thing, and it comes out crayon shaped. End of segment. Wow, that was great, Steve.
Yeah, that's true.
That's how it goes. It's like the entire era was. You learn how everybody does everything except for the reality.
Yeah. Well, how they motivate themselves to get out of bed in the morning to do those things.
Yeah. I'm going to go into work today to make crayons again. It's still fun.
This is exactly how I saw my life turning out.
But, you know, I mean, it is true that a lot of those shows were similar, and I think they kind of blend together for me, and that's why I did not remember it specifically up until I revisited it. But okay, so let me ask you this, John, as someone who has kids, do your kids watch it? Have they seen it, or what's the deal with that?
We downloaded the app a while back and we gave it a try, and this is going to come across like a humble brag, but it's not. But reading like it is something that I've always been, you know, I love to read. Like it's a favorite pastime sort of thing. And it's not something that like I just felt obligated to do in school or anything. And my wife is an avid reader too. So we've always had story time, and like the kids read already. So like, I think it might've been a similar sort of thing where by the time it was like, oh, hey kids, you know, this was a show that was on when mommy and daddy were younger, and you know, why don't you give this a try? And they basically had the reaction of, yeah, we got this covered. We're good. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. time to move on to Dirty Jobs or something similar.
No. Yeah, something with vocational training so that I can lower their expectations.
They're already like young adult novels.
Yeah.
They ride the Martian, like the what's it called? The Tripods trilogy. And they're like, oh, I love the Tripods. That's a little racist.
It was badass.
It's a little racist.
I see. I don't remember. I was like, eight when I read it.
There's a lot of racism in
there. Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Yeah, well, I mean, talking about the app, that's how Reading Rainbow exists now. Now, it was canceled in 2009. Burton basically blames government spending on things which are less worthy than education as the reason for its cancellation.
You don't think it's important to protect our country?
I guess it is important to protect our country, but
if we that read was books, a the retrospective. On literally all of American history in one sentence.
Yes. So, you know, I mean, it was canceled. And Burton, who felt that it was still worthy of existing, bought the rights himself along with his business partner, who's a producer in Hollywood, whose name escapes me, I'm sorry. And the two of them decided to relaunch Reading Rainbow as this app where basically it has a bunch of children's books, like hundreds of children's books, mm-hmm. which kids can read in the app, as well as the quote-unquote field trips, both old and new. And it's
Reading Rainbow went for a really long time. Old and new is all included in that run.
Yeah, they but also like newly produced field trips with Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a whole big thing, I think it was last year, with like a Kickstarter where they were looking for $1 million to get this thing up and running, and they ended up making like $3.5 million. And
Because I, you see, that was the thing that I found fuzzy, because I heard that they, like Seth MacFarlane said he would donate $1 million if they reached 5 million.
Oh, I mean, maybe
and
it was.
Then I heard that he did, and then I heard the total was like 5,400,000. I was like, "What? What? That math doesn't add up." Someone needs to write a book about math.
Yeah. Here's how Seth MacFarlane made the money to donate $1 million.
But yeah,
he watched Reading Rainbow.
Yeah.
But yeah, regardless of how much money they made off of Kickstarter, it was a success, and it is an app now, and you know it's kind of cool that this thing still exists.
Yeah, Kickstarter has been an amazing thing for lots of really good things, and also that Zach Braff movie.
And what that Veronica Mars movie, right?
That movie was great.
That was awesome. Yeah. Come on. You're not a Veronica Mars fan? You're not a marshmallow?
Don't do that.
What? That's the actual name for the fans?
Yeah.
No.
So let me ask you guys this. John, first, yep. I guess. Whatever. Doesn't matter. How does Reading Rainbow tie into Burton's other works as you see it? Because it is kind of an oddball thing in that it's not an acting assignment. He's like the host of this thing, although there is some definite acting involved. And
I'm like pretending that working at a diner is fun.
Yes. And then there's also sort of the whole producing aspect, you know, and the mm-hmm. creation aspect to it, you know, but thematically and whatnot, how do you see it tying into Burton's career?
Just sort of that, the sense of caring about social good and, you know, I don't want to call it a cause or anything like that, but you know, Roots is a very, you know, it's a provocative series that, you know, to this day evokes a lot of discussion about important issues. And literacy, of course, it, you know, is an important thing. And, you know, kids need to be educated and know how to read and all of that stuff. And so it really seems like it's motivated by an altruistic sensibility, you know, anybody can produce a show for fame or money or anything like that. He's producing something that its whole intended goal is just to make life better for people. So I think that speaks to who he is and what he's been trying to do with his fame and fortune.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, it is kind of cool. I mean, we talked about this, I think, a little bit on the intro episode that we had for Burton. But, you know, he really does seem to have, like, a very big philanthropic side to his career. And
I actually recently discovered an entirely new thing that I had never heard of. Apparently, he spoke recently at some sort of medical conference because he's active in promoting like medical awareness in other countries about certain diseases. And
oh,
I was
really?
Like, what? Come on, make it easy to tally these things up. It's really hard to quantify your karma when you're always moving around.
Yeah, I mean, he does that. I mean, obviously, there's, you know, the...
Also, he was that bubble on Adventure Time, and that was rad.
Okay, all right. I mean, there is that the civil rights, you know, kind of aspect, too, that you see in Roots, and mm-hmm. you always see him advocating for, you know, or against social injustice on, you know, CNN and stuff like that. They bring him in lots of times as, I don't know, what? I mean, it's not like he's an expert, but he's like the guy to talk to whenever there's something that needs to be discussed.
Well, you know, you got to get someone sexy.
There you go. I guess that's it. What about you, Max? Do you have anything else to add to that? Or
no, I mean, like that's actually sort of like the frustrating thing. It's like I can't really quantify how much good he am.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of like everywhere, and it's like. Look, I already was totally on board. I was already a fan of you before, like, I put all of the pieces together of, like, all the stuff you were doing. And all you're doing is making it seem like I'm not a big enough fan. And, dude, just give me the time. I will get around to figuring it out.
Yeah, I mean, he does seem like a really cool guy, all things considered. And reading Rainbow seems like just a big piece of that overall puzzle, so it's cool.
Yeah, it's a very positive thing that he did for a very long time.
Yeah,
that I didn't appreciate when it would have been right for me because I was already cynical about.
I mean, that's
books.
The thing. That's the thing. As a kid, you know, it really does seem like, you know, there were certain programs where it's like, well, this is fun to watch, and this is, you know, basically an extension of school. And
you're
I remember,
trying to educate me.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that's the thing. And every time that song would come on, I would just be like, oh, God. No, please. There's got to be something better on TV than this.
See, for me, it was like, this is the show for little kids. The ones that are like 1 year younger than me. And when you're a kid, that's like an epic amount of time.
It is.
Like, you're like, oh, man, I read that book like 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in like 15 minutes, and this show is what, a half hour long? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm gonna watch some transforming robots fight each other.
Yep. That's really what it was.
And that's not Transformers. That's the like probably Transor Z, which would have been out at the time.
Oh, okay. Well, Max, any final thoughts on Reading Rainbow?
I am hopeful that there are more good things from Reading Rainbow, and when it sort of petered out and I heard about the cancellation and I was like, and I was investigating that, I was surprised to know that like it didn't ever stop. Like it was going until fairly recently.
Yeah, I mean it was canceled in 2009, but they still had episodes air like through like 2012.
Yeah, you know? And I was shocked by how vast that catalog was. And when I like glanced at like the past, like the last couple years, it was like I want to see a lot of.
Yeah,
these
I know. There's
now.
A lot of them where it's like, what? They had that guy on there? I mean, it is kind of strange. But yeah, I mean, like if you look at it, they only made 160 episodes over the course of I think 13 seasons or 16 seasons or something.
Yeah.
And like just in watching them, like they did repackage them. Like I was looking for the original theme song, but then I found like a new theme song with all this like CGI and of you know sort of Nemesis era LeVar Burton, and then the episode.
How'd you have to do that?
I'm just saying the episode starts and is very much a TNG season 2 LeVar Burton.
Oh,
you know. So
really mixing it up.
I'm just saying. So anyway, I mean, it is kind of crazy that, I mean, but yes, I guess, and that's the way that the show is kind of designed and everything, but it has been repackaged, and even though there are only 160 episodes, they're still, I'm assuming, in heavy rotation. I'm assuming, maybe not anymore, but I mean, you can get them on Amazon and stuff.
Well, when it was canceled, I was really disappointed, because that was like the notification that like they were still doing cool things, and as the years went on, they were still doing like really neat things and stuff I wanted to check out, but I was like, why isn't it on like Hulu or something?
Yeah, that's it ridiculous. There are a bunch of episodes on Amazon now, but
well, that's good.
Well, what about you, John? Any final thoughts on Reading Rainbow?
You know, not really. You know, I feel maybe I should have watched it when I was younger, but...
See, that's the thing. It's like, even though it's something where you're like, yeah, I should have totally watched this thing to see what this cool thing was. It's like, unless you were five, there really wasn't a reason to, you know?
Yeah. No, but like, when you're like 13, you can sit down and watch it and go like, This isn't bad.
I guess so, but you're not going to, because then when your other 13-year-old friends come over, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? We should be watching Cinemax right now.
Are you kidding me? When I was 13, all we did was watch things ironically. That is literally the entire after-school and before-school activity roster. It's like, what are you watching ironically this morning? Oh, I'm going to watch, the Today Show. And
no
laugh
way.
At it.
I was still, gosh, 13, jeez. I was still... hunting down like Transformers and Tom and Jerry, non-ironically, just because I thought it was hysterical.
I think 13 years
were
old.
Were you hysterical?
No, I was not. I was a good boy at 13.
I think when I was 13, I was way into Saved by the Bell and TGIF. But really,
you're the worst human being.
But really, the overwhelming thing that sort of
the worst one.
That sort of drove my passions, I guess, was sports. But, well, actually, 13, I take that back. That was like 12. 13 was the year that I started getting into Star Trek. 13 is the year when Star Trek took over everything for me.
Mm-hmm. So, lucky 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, I guess I don't have much to add either. Just basically that, yeah, I think that even though it's something which... I'm assuming the overwhelming majority of people who are listening to this would have absolutely no interest in watching. Its place in history is certainly really important.
But that's the crazy thing about it. It works when you're an adult.
It does.
Better than when you're a kid.
Sure.
I don't know how that works. I don't know why that happens. But since being a child, I have watched episodes and thought, this is not bad.
It's probably that
educational
thing.
I get the appeal of this.
Yeah, I think because when you get older and you have that appreciation, I think there's some sort of natural instinct where you see something like this and you want to have a kid next to you to be like, you should be paying attention to this right now. This is important.
Well, it's been fun talking about Reading Rainbow today, but this isn't the only thing we're talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain.
Is it our birthday?
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven break up. That's for real.
Yeah, they that shake happened. Hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
Yeah, see ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
At this point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well-thought-out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over-menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, yeah, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie, is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows to find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for our other listeners to find the show as they search in iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our show on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
I know you read that.
No, I didn't. I just
reading Rainbow prepared you for it.
I learned how from rainbows.
There you go. I took a look. It was in a book. Actually,
reading Rainbow?
No, it was just on this computer screen here.
Okay.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com.
Yeah, don't read a book. Listen to
it. Yeah, exactly. For those people who didn't see Reading Rainbow and never learned how to read, you can listen to all your favorite books. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. They've even got books about learning how to read, like this one, Life is So Good, One Man's Extraordinary Journey Through the 20th Century and How He Learned to Read at Age 98. It's written by George Dawson and Richard Glaubman and narrated by LeVar Burton. In Life is So Good, read by Emmy Award nominee LeVar Burton, hey, George Dawson shares his unique wisdom about survival, joy, people, and the hidden beauty of growing old. And you can get this book for free since you listen to Trek FM. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. One more way that you can help keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Yeah, Patreon's good. Not responsible for any Zach Braff movies.
That's right.
So far.
So far. All right. Well, that's it for Reading Rainbow. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, or you can find me on a little weekly show I do with my buddy Craig called Words with Nerds.
Excellent. And you can find Max and myself on CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do Commentary Track Stars off topic with our friend Brandon. We're going to be doing something a little special, I think, if we can manage to get our act together. But, you know, in addition to our normal episode, we've got our 500th
thing
Commentary Track Stars production coming up. And we're going to do something special, which is all-encompassing. And you can go over there next week and check that out. You can also find me right here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit with Drew. And you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars, and you can email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. All right. Well, that's it for LeVar Burton in terms of looking at his Emmy-nominated stuff. Although next week, we will be back to recap his career as an Emmy nominee.